Hello, and welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Webinar Wednesday. This webinar today is on the principal's role in social-emotional learning. On behalf of NAESP, we'd like to thank you all for participating today. We know how important this topic is, and we hope that you will gain a lot of good resources and links that you can use in your school for this area. My name is Honor Feedy, and I'm the Professional Learning Coordinator here at NAESP, and I'll be supporting our panel of speakers today. Today's presentation may be downloaded at our website at www.naesp.org/webinars. With that, I would like to now welcome our CASEL speakers this afternoon, Melissa Schlinger, Justina Schlund, and Sherry Raven. Thank you all for presenting your expertise in this area.
Thanks, Honor. This is Melissa Schlinger, and we're thrilled to be here. I'm the Vice President for Practice and Programs at CASEL. In that role, I oversee the work that we do with our Collaborating Districts Initiative, which is 20 large urban districts who are systemically implementing SEL throughout their district and schools. I also oversee the work we do to create resources for the field based on that and research on SEL.
Great. Hi, everyone. Justina Schlund. I'm the Director of Field Learning for CASEL. So I'm overseeing tools and professional resource development related to school-wide and district-wide SEL, which we'll be talking about here today.
And I'm Sherry Raven, former principal and SEL director in Austin Independent School District, and now working with implementing SEL across the school day and out of school time in 6 large urban districts.
Great. So with that, I'm just going to jump right in. So we have a lot to cover, and we want to make sure that we have time for questions at the end. In case you're not familiar with CASEL, CASEL's been around for 25 years. It's a collaborative for academic, social, and emotional learning. And our mission is to help make social and emotional learning an essential part of all students' education pre-K to 12. We do this by collaborating with a number of organizations and collaborators. We have a group focused on advancing the science of SEL. So that's our research team. We have another group focused on working at the policy level at federal and state policy. And then we also have the practice group. That's our team here and others that are really trying to better understand and support what's happening in classrooms, schools, and districts across the country. Our major effort in the practice department is our Collaborating Districts Initiative, which was a research practice partnership that launched in 2011. The goal of that collaboration was to actually research some important questions about SEL. First of all, we wanted to understand what would it mean to implement SEL systemically in large urban districts. We also wondered if that was even a feasible thing to do in large urban districts, knowing what we know about turnover and budget crunches and priority switches. And third, we also wanted to understand if that was a feasible thing to do, what would happen for students. We began with 8 large urban districts. And the reason that we started with these 8 districts, even though that was an overwhelming number of districts to start with, was because honestly, we thought we might lose 3 or 4 of them along the way. And we really wanted to make sure we had enough data to examine our questions. But what we found was that these eight districts, while they did turn over superintendents, they did have a lot of other priorities like Common Core and teacher strikes and budget crunches. All 8 districts to this day continue their work to systemically implement SEL. So the question about is this feasible was a resounding yes. We're really excited that these districts are continuing to work. And we're also excited that those districts have also gotten great outcomes for students. Now, they're still working at it. This is not something that we expect to do and then be done, but something that will be an ongoing priority for these and other districts. In fact, those 8 districts have now grown to almost 20 districts. Some of that happened because as superintendents moved from district to district, they often took the priority of social and emotional learning with them. And CASEL decided to include some of those districts as part of our ongoing community of work. So after the original 8, we added in Atlanta Public Schools in El Paso. In 2017, we brought on 5 districts that Sherry Raven, who you'll hear from later, is overseeing their work. And in more recent years, we've added Baltimore, Maryland, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Guilford County, North Carolina into this professional learning community of districts who are systemically implementing SEL. Before we get into what that actually means and what it looks like, and by the way, if you're interested in more information about the Collaborating Districts Initiative and the research and the outcomes, all of that's available on our website. We're not going to spend a lot of time on the outcomes there, but I am going to give you a high-level overview of some of the specific outcomes that we know that have been part of the reason there's been this tsunami of interest in SEL in recent years. First of all, in 2011, the landmark study of the meta-analysis, which included 213 studies involving school-based SEL, found that not only did SEL programming link to impact improved social and emotional skills, but we also saw that SEL programming improved attitudes about self, others, and school, better classroom behavior, and importantly, an 11 percentile point gain on standardized achievement tests. This was a really big, important finding. As you all know, sometimes even academic interventions don't result in that high of an academic improvement. In addition to improving these important areas, we also saw reductions in conduct problems and emotional distress, the latter being of significant importance, especially as we see our country really reeling from spikes in mental health crises. We also saw in the meta-analysis that some of those studies were longitudinal. In 82 of those studies, we could follow up and see the long-term effects and found that those benefits were, in fact, lasting. There was students were showing higher academic performance, SEL competence, better attitudes and behavior, and lower conduct problems, emotional distress, and drug use. All of these studies are available on our website, so I'm just going to go through them really quickly to give you a high-level overview. I know this is important to principals. We also know that when SEL programming is happening in schools, that teachers who are improving their own SEL competence are more likely to stay in the classroom longer and less likely to be affected by burnout because they are having better relationships, better able to manage behavior, better able to be a role model, and they're able to manage their own emotions. We also know that it's not just about school, that we know that kindergarten students, when they were followed for 20 years, those who were stronger in SEL competence were more likely to graduate, complete a college degree, and obtain stable employment, and less likely to be living in public housing, receiving public assistance, involved with police, or in a detention facility. But the good news is you don't have to have SEL competence in kindergarten to be successful or not. We know that these are skills that can be taught. We also know that these are programs that schools are seeing a high return on investment. A study out of Columbia University in New York found that the average return on investment for SEL programming is a savings of $11 for every dollar spent. And that means that this is less money spent later on remediation, dropout recovery, and other types of expensive programs. In addition to a growing field of research findings, we are also seeing great demand from all sectors. We're seeing teachers and parents, we're seeing employers and state-level legislators and federal government all saying that SEL is important, and even the students themselves are saying that SEL is important to them. We actually have a brand new hot-off-the-press report from principals' perspective. This is a 2019 just-released report that found that principals continue to believe that SEL skills are teachable and should be a priority in schools. This is a follow-up report to the report that we conducted in 2017. CASEL will be hosting a webinar specifically on this report in 2 weeks. And the information about that webinar can be found at CASEL's homepage at www.casel.org. If you scroll to the bottom of our front homepage, you'll see information about how to get more information about this Ready to Lead report. But you can see some of the findings show that principals are believing that there's a much the SEL would have a major benefit on important skills, relationships among students, and a positive school climate. And we know that that there are still challenges, however, that they're seeing that there needs to be more reinforcement outside of school. We know that teachers are feeling like they don't have enough time to address yet another area. We know that there is a need for additional funding and additional training. So hopefully you'll be able to join us for our webinar there. So let's just talk briefly about what social and emotional learning is, which I know many of you on this website already know what SEL is. So I'm just going to go very quickly over how CASEL defines SEL, and then I'm going to turn it over to Justina, who's going to talk about how we've learned it can be best implemented in schools. So you all are probably familiar with this definition, which is the most cited definition of social and emotional learning. SEL is a process through which children and adults acquire and apply knowledge, attitudes, and skills so that they can understand and manage their emotions, set and achieve goals, show empathy, and establish and maintain good relationships and make good choices. One couple things to point out here is that sometimes people are sort of hear this definition without really looking at a couple of key points. One being that SEL is a process. Sometimes it gets confused with a list of skills that you teach and you're done. But we know that kids and adults too, which is why you also see adults mentioned here, are constantly developing and enhancing their SEL competence. So these are important things to be thinking about. When we talk about SEL competence, CASEL has organized these into five buckets, if you will. The first two in orange is where I'm going to start, which is where we really think about the SEL competence of ourself and our own understanding of ourself. So self-awareness refers to our ability to really understand our own emotions, understand our own cultural identity, understand our own strengths and self-confidence, our own self-efficacy. Here's where you might see things like growth mindset. Really, how do I understand who I am and how I feel? This is all part of our self-awareness. How we behave with that information is part of our self-management. So here we're talking about, can I manage impulses? Can I manage stress? Can I stay motivated and disciplined? Can I set goals to and achieve them? Can I persevere? This is where you'll find things like grit. So self-awareness and self-management have to do with how we know and understand ourselves and how we behave with that information. In the green, we start talking about others. So social awareness has to do with, can we understand others, how they think, how they feel? Can we put ourselves in their shoes? Can we appreciate those who are different from us and have respect for different folks? That's all part of our social awareness. Can we pick up on different cues and different social cues in the environment in which we're working? Relationship skills has to do with what we do with that information. So how do we interact with others? How do we communicate? How do we engage? How do we work cooperatively, manage conflict? How do we ask for help and how do we offer help? That's all part of our relationship skills. And then, of course, how do we put all that together to make responsible decisions? How do we identify problems and analyze situations? And that includes a complex process of understanding, who am I? How do I fit into this situation? What are the ways in which I can advocate or use agency or solve problems and evaluate consequences? How do I reflect on what's happening and how do I behave ethically? That's all part of our responsible decision making. So those are the five different areas of social and emotional competence. And some folks associate SEL simply with this list. But at CASEL, we like to think about a systemic approach, meaning that we want to be promoting these competencies for kids and adults, not just in the classroom, but throughout the school, throughout our communities, and in our homes. And I'm going to turn it over to Justina, who's going to help us understand the different ways in which SEL can be promoted for students and adults in these different environments.
Great. Thanks so much, Melissa. And so happy to be here with you all. So I want to talk a little bit about what SEL means for schools. And as anyone who's worked in schools knows, among the many challenges that we as educators face, I think not one of those challenges is about us having too few initiatives or programs. So we think a really important place to begin is really understanding how SEL connects, bridges, and builds upon a lot of the work that you're already doing to support students. So I like to begin this conversation around school-wide SEL in a really simple way, which is asking, what is it that you want your school to look like, feel like, and sound like if you'd created the type of environment you want for your children? And I think this is an important question for all of us as educators, but also for us to engage the families that we work with in the members of our communities and students themselves. So if we were in the room, I'd probably ask you to reflect on this question together. But for now, I'd like you just to hold these ideas in your head as we sort of talk through what this means in relationship to SEL. So CASEL has developed 10 indicators of high-quality SEL implementation to help make SEL a little bit more concrete in terms of what it looks, feels, and sounds like in schools when implemented well. And you can hopefully see how these indicators connect to this vision of the school you want. We know from experience that school-wide SEL can be a long-term process that can take up to 3 to 5 years to be fully implemented, but we think schools can begin seeing evidence of high-quality implementation throughout this process. And these things include, sort of evidence that you'd see in the classroom, like dedicated time for teachers to engage students explicitly in learning about and practicing SEL, as well as embedding SEL into their academic instruction and classroom climate. It also includes things you'd see throughout all parts of the school, like young people engaged in sharing their ideas, like a work environment that supports adults in their own SEL, as well as policies and practices such as supportive discipline policies, student supports that are aligned with SEL. And it also includes family and community partnerships to support SEL and a school-wide continuous improvement culture and structures that support implementation. So these indicators aren't a checklist. They're not kind of a one-by-one, we move through them and say we're done. But the question really is, how do we get to these indicators and ultimately the type of school that you want for your children? CASEL's developed a framework for systemic SEL implementation that's based on the learnings from research and from field testing in the districts that Melissa talked about in our Collaborating Districts initiative. And this process for implementation is not a one-size-fits-all across every school, but it is kind of common themes and experiences across the dozens of school districts that we've kind of learned some things that are really important for implementation. So I'm going to give you kind of the two-minute overview of these focus areas right now, but you can find a lot more detailed information and free resources and downloadable tools on our CASEL Guide to School-Wide SEL, which is at schoolguide.casel.org. And here you'll also be able to find within the guidance administrators' actions that provide additional support and tools specifically if you are in the role of a school principal or assistant principal. So to begin, looking at focus area one, this is really the starting point for most schools for beginning the SEL work, which is saying that SEL really relies on us building a deep foundational support among all of those stakeholders. If you think back to the model that Melissa shared with homes and communities surrounding schools and classrooms, we know that this work means bringing together your staff, your families, your community partners, and students to the table from the beginning. Really, SEL, I like to say SEL is a team sport, right? Although you may be the leader in the school building, it really relies on creating that shared leadership responsibility among a lot of different stakeholders and empowering them with the ability to make and act on decisions. And we also think it's important, especially as a school leader, to be able to create the time and space for all of your staff to engage in foundational learning on SEL, and then engaging other stakeholders, including community partners and families, in setting the vision and plan for SEL that reflects the values of your school community. Focus area two is really about the adults. And this is some of the biggest learnings, I think, for CASEL and the field at large in the last few years, which is that really you cannot do this work without thinking and paying close attention to the adults that you're working with and their own social and emotional learning needs. So this focus area really talks about how do you help staff learn about and strengthen their own skills around supporting students' social emotional learning, as well as reflect on their own social, emotional, and cultural competence. It also means for a school leader that we need to be creating protected time for staff to regularly collaborate with each other and embedding into existing staff meetings intentional opportunities for adults to connect personally, interact in meaningful ways, and share appreciations and reflections. And lastly, this also means that as staff and leaders in the school building, a lot of how we teach is through modeling SEL. And so identifying explicit ways to model SEL in your interactions with staff, families, and students becomes a critical part on how we strengthen adult social emotional learning competencies. Focus area 3 is all about the students. And this is really kind of the heart of our implementation and why we're all doing this work around SEL. There are many ways we believe at CASEL to promote SEL for students. And we believe that the approach that you take should be both evidence-based as well as culturally grounded in your context. And this means kind of bringing all of your programs and policies and practices into alignment around SEL. So this includes discipline policies and student supports that we talked about. It might also include just the norms and agreements that you share throughout the school building. We also believe a critical part of implementation to support students is the adoption of an evidence-based SEL program that can help guide staff in providing explicit SEL instruction, engaging students in ongoing practice of SEL, and as part of that, having high-quality professional learning, coaching, and supports for them. Your role as a principal or an assistant principal, I think, is critically important in ensuring that teachers have the support that they need and the feedback that they need to engage in classroom environments, to set up classroom environments and engage students in this type of learning. And as part of this work, we also think it's important to begin pulling in families and community partners around the work that they're already doing to promote SEL for students. And focus area 4 is practicing continuous improvement, which comes numerically at the end of the focus areas, but really runs throughout all of the work that we do around SEL implementation. This work around SEL implementation, we believe, is really complex systems level work, and it requires a culture where learning from mistakes is not only accepted, but it's also celebrated through clear and consistent communication and modeling, through ensuring that the SEL team and other involved staff have access to high quality data, through modeling your own reflective practices around data as a school leader, and offering opportunities for staff to cultivate knowledge and skills for doing that data analysis and reflection. So that was kind of a very high-level, brief overview of all 4 focus areas. And again, if you're interested in getting deeper into any of these, please visit us at schoolguide.casel.org. Right now, I'm going to turn it over to Sherry Raven to share her perspective and experiences, both as the principal and a district leader and a coach to many districts, around what school-wide SEL implementation looks like.
Thank you, Justina, and good afternoon, everyone. So we're going to start with looking at what we did to implement SEL in Austin, Texas. Austin is a district of 130 schools, and we started first with an evidence-based program. We thought, gosh, we need to get this to the students quickly. So first year, right out of the box, we started with Second Step in our elementary and middle schools, and then with School Connect in our high schools. Except for one high school where the principal said, I'm not going to let you touch my students until you've spent a year with the adults. We're going to come back to that one in a minute. Because we were 130 schools, we rolled out the program in cohorts with 2 or 3 vertical teams or feeder patterns a year. We started with vertical teams applying to be part of the initiative, so started with cohorts of the willing, and then expanded, and at the middle of the second year, had laid out a plan for what vertical teams were going to begin when. By the time we got to the 3rd and 4th year, we had schools saying, yeah, I know I'm supposed to be in the last year, but I'm going to come in now because I'm ready now and I need to do this work. So the cohort system wasn't completely clean and clear, but it's how we started it. We did make it to implementation in all 130 schools in 5 years, of course, with varying degrees of fidelity and implementation. But each of those schools was and is doing something to deepen the SEL implementation on their campuses. Critical to that work were campus steering committees. So each committee had an SEL steering committee comprised of an administrator, usually also a counselor, and some grade level teachers. We also had a steering committee at the district level, an advisory team who worked with us on designing and implementing SEL in central office and at the district level. Finally, we started using an implementation rubric. This is different from the CASEL walkthrough rubric or even the district rubric for CASEL because we wanted to measure some things that we thought might make a difference, but we weren't sure. So it had some things in it like how often does your steering committee meet. A lot of these things are in the CASEL rubric also. Don't let me mislead you there. How often does the principal communicate about SEL? How often is explicit instruction happening? So as that implementation rolled along, we were able to see pretty clear correlations between the depth of implementation and the results that were coming out of it. In 2017, Austin rolled out SEL 2.0, focusing heavily on adding equity work into the work of SEL, adding assistant superintendents and principal supervisors in a study group to really learn deeply about SEL, and they've moved to a model of seed campuses. When we started thinking about model campuses, and then we said, that's not really fair, that's not really right, because nobody's ever arrived, so you wouldn't necessarily be a model campus who is doing all things right for SEL. So the department, and this was after I left, but the department has transformed that into a seed campus, and those are campuses that are owning the work themselves and creating their own goals and strategies and action plans to deepen their SEL implementation. Through the 8 years, now that Austin ISD has been working on SEL, there have been some lessons learned, and these are my take on these, not anybody else. The first one is that the order of the focus areas 1 through 3 that Justina talked about, the building buy-in and developing a plan, working on the adults, working with students, that order does matter some. I told you we started with an evidence-based program, started with the students, ends up that principal who said, but you got to work with the adults first, was right, because we had some people who would teach a great evidence-based lesson and then turn around and go out in the hall and scream at kids without regulating their own emotions. And it just didn't quite work without building the adult skills too. And I am always tempted to skip that step about setting the vision and really having a good vision and mission statement, but it matters. So starting there so that people understand the core material together and together design where are we trying to go in the end really matters as you implement the other things. We learned you have to communicate early and often, all the time, over-communicate. Parents want to know what this is. When they know what this is, they're like, oh, wow, why didn't we have this when I was in school? Yes, we need this. This is fabulous. If you don't communicate early and often and bring them in, you don't have the same support. Also, we learned about adult connections. Always worth spending the time in staff meeting to build those connections. I had a third grade teacher retiring from my campus, and I said, what advice would you give me as you retire? And she said, Sherry, don't cancel staff meeting because you may not always need to see us, but we need to see each other, and we need to have a chance to talk with each other and build those connections so that we don't have somebody in the building saying, you know, that tall teacher who I think teaches fourth grade, the time building that community and connection among your staff is always worth taking out of staff meeting time. Next, explicit instruction and integration are both important, and you have to figure out how to monitor and give feedback on both of them. We don't want social-emotional learning to be something you do from 2 to 2:30 on Tuesday. We need it to be integrated throughout every lesson all day long. And the explicit skills instruction is important because we have students who need, and all students, I would argue, need to learn how to make a good apology, how to make a good first impression, how to know that feeling angry and feeling frustrated feel different in your body and have different meanings. So figuring out how to monitor both of those is important. Next, we've learned that using our students to bring our families into the work is critical. We had grandmothers say, oh, yeah, my granddaughter came home yesterday and said, Mom, Grandma, I can tell you're upset. I just need you to breathe with me for a minute. Our students are great ambassadors and can carry messages home and can bring families in for family night, and they can do the training in the classrooms to reach the families. And last, you're never finished. Nobody, this is part of the reason we moved away from model campuses in Austin, because you're never finished with the work. Continuous improvement and building social-emotional skills are true for everybody all the time. Last, I want to emphasize the importance of the principal. This comes from Daniel Goleman in his book, Primal Leadership, when he said, The reason a leader's emotional intelligence matters, oh, the leader's manner matters so much, is the design of the human brain. The open loop nature of our limbic system means that we have mirror neurons. And typically, within about 20 minutes, the mood of any group matches the mood of the leader of that group. So you, as principals, are the climate setters and the social-emotional heart of your building every day. Thank you.
That's amazing. Thank you, Sherry, so much. What a comment. This is Honor Feedy. I would like to handle the question and answer if I could. And I've typed a question in the chat box. I'd like to get our audience's little bit of feedback here. What are you doing in your school to build your staff's SEL? Sherry's has mentioned some things that she's doing, but I'm curious to know, we have a little bit of time here, if you could type in the chat box what ideas and strategies you're doing, and I'll read them out to our panel. And also, if you have any questions, this is our time now for you to type those in as well, and I'll ask our panel. As we're waiting for folks to do that, if you could, ladies, I'd like to ask start our questions out here. Sherry, what's a challenge that you faced as you were implementing SEL, and how did you meet it?
One of the challenges is that I faced with teachers saying, well, everything we do is SEL. We do this all the time. So why do we need to do something special for it? And we spent a lot of time talking about how we teach other skills. For example, I love this example from when I taught sixth grade math. I taught ratios in sixth grade math, and my kids could do anything you wanted with ratios. They went across the hall to the science teacher and acted like they had never heard of a ratio before. And the science teacher had me come across the hall, and the kids looked at the same stuff on the board and went, oh, yeah, because I was in the room and they connected it to the math. The same concept applies with our social-emotional learning. If we just teach it during lessons, or if we don't name it, if we name the skills, so that students know what they're doing, then we enable the transfer that goes from place to place. So that really helped my teacher see that you can teach the skill in an explicit lesson, and then it needs to be integrated throughout the day and named. So asking students as they start an activity, what social emotional skills do you need to do this today? Or saying, as you start an activity, I want you to focus on this social-emotional competence as you do this, and then at the end say, how'd you do with it? So teaching our young people to reflect on the social-emotional skills they're using during other learning as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We have lots of questions that have come in. Let me just read some of them to you all. Stephen writes, using activities from the book Onward by Eleanor Aguilar at the beginning of each staff meeting is a strategy he uses. Ben writes, second step curriculum, we also did a school-wide book read of trauma-sensitive schools, now building out as an MTSS framework of supports for both students and staff. Jolyn asks the question, out of all the SEL programs, did you use the demographics to select the SEL program? Who would like to answer that? Is that Melissa?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I think that might be for Sherry, but if you are thinking about how to select an evidence-based program, in the CASEL Guide to Schoolwide SEL, there's actually a whole section that can walk you through the best process for selecting an evidence-based program. Many of you may know that on CASEL's website, we've done a review of programs, and the program review reads almost like a consumer reports guide, where you can get a summary of the program. You can see what research has been done on the program, and then you can see in a chart how well it covers different things. So I would definitely encourage you to select a program based on evidence and select one that works for your needs. We've seen schools use different data to decide how they want to select a program, from the amount of training required to the cost to how well it aligns with the standards that they're trying to achieve. So there's lots of support on our website for how to do a good job with this important process.
And I have a follow-up question on that. Oh, go ahead.
I was just adding, I put a link to that tool that Melissa's talking about and that resource into the chat box. If anyone's interested, it'll take you directly there. And those questions around the context of your school as well as the evidence, all of those questions are embedded into the tools that ask people to reflect on those and creating, kind of bringing together the right stakeholders to have those discussions.
Jolyn writes a follow-up question about, you know, why have we approved so many SEL programs? Have we lowered the thresholds or benchmarks?
Well, in CASEL's, the way that we set criteria, this is looking at evidence on programs, and we actually see more and more programs that are being published, but there is a pretty rigorous bar for programs to achieve the CASEL Select status. They have to have been part of a well-designed study, and it has to be a universal approach for all students. So we are planning to expand our program review now that new programs are becoming available. We really do feel like one of the greatest risks to this field is people implementing SEL in a way that isn't evidence-based or that is sort of homegrown approaches, which can be very effective, but we don't know. So we encourage taking an evidence-based approach and or evaluating the impact of the work that you're doing. One of the things that we encourage all schools and districts to do when they're prioritizing SEL is to ask themselves the questions of why are they doing this? What are the goals they want to achieve? And how will they know if they've achieved those goals? So maybe a goal is they want to improve climate in their school, or they want to see a reduction in discipline incidents, or they want to see improvements in attendance, or they want to see all of those things. Whatever those goals are, we provide guidance on how do you select goals, and then how do you design an SEL implementation that is specifically implemented to help you achieve those goals with regular opportunities to reflect on the work that you're doing. So we do think evidence-based programs and practices are a really important part of this process. And even if you're not using one from our guide, we hope that everyone's reflecting to see if what they're doing is achieving results.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to school districts that selected approved SEL programs that were used on student populations that don't match the student demographics being supported?
Yeah, that's a problem. And I would encourage schools and districts to look carefully at the research that was done, and also to contact the publishers. If you see a program that wasn't done with a diverse population or the similar population to what you have, I would encourage you to contact the publisher to ask them if they have any additional research. They typically submit research to CASEL for this that meets a very high bar. So for example, there has to be a control group, there has to be a that's matched, there has to be a number of criteria that can be really difficult for program providers to achieve. But typically, program providers have a lot more data than what they're sharing with us. And some of the data may not be owned by the program provider, but may be owned by the district. So, for example, if you contacted Second Step, they could give you data, but Austin did their own evaluation of the impact of their programming as well. So I would definitely encourage you to look carefully to see what data there is and if it is a population that is similar to the one that you're working with.
Awesome.
And I would also ask the publisher for a list of districts that are using their materials, because you can easily match a district from that list with yourself and call them directly and ask, how's it going and what do you think of it?
Great. Thank you. Stephen writes, I work in a rural school district. When reviewing the research provided through the CASEL report, I have found only a limited number of programs that have research in rural settings. As we consider looking at SEL programs, what suggestions would you make based on the limited research in rural settings via the report?
I'm glad you asked that question. And we actually, as you can see from our Collaborating Districts Initiative list, a lot of the work that CASEL's doing on implementation has been in large urban districts. We have actually been doing some implementation work in smaller suburban and rural districts as well. And so we're looking to increase our knowledge and expertise around implementation in rural districts. With respect to the actual programs in rural districts and rural schools, ideally you would find that there are certain practices and strategies that can work across settings. But again, I would just encourage you to, before you implement something district-wide or before you, really, as you're thinking through your implementation, to evaluate how it goes in smaller implementations in a pilot or in a school or in grade levels and see if what the impact of that work is before expanding. Justina, did you want to add anything to that?
No, that was actually what I was going to say too. I think the continuous improvement processes that we talk about in the school guide are critical to this conversation. So, I mean, there's still a lot of research in SEL to be done. In the meantime, I think our schools are ongoing, and this is part of the process of ensuring you have a team established, ensuring that you have cycles of data review and analysis established. I'll also go ahead and put in the link a link directly to the continuous improvement section that has some tools around data reflection protocols and stuff.
Awesome. The next question is for Sherry. Sherry, how do you get buy-in from all of your staff while you're working on this social emotional? What strategies did you use to get buy-in? And I guess that could be for any of you.
That could be for any of us. Yeah. I talked earlier about starting with a coalition of the willing, which I think is important. And when we did our very first training on social emotional learning, maybe not the first one, it might have been the second one, I intentionally focused on, because we couldn't take everyone to this training. We could take like six people to kind of be trained to train other people. So I took four strong supporters, one real naysayer, and one kind of middle of the road person, because I really wanted the people who were naysayers to also know that we were hearing and listening and talking about their concerns in doing this work too. So I think I would say, succinctly, start with your coalition of the willing. Don't forget to listen to your naysayers, because they have value and will strengthen your program as you listen to their concerns and address them. And don't be afraid to start small and pilot if you need to, and let some of the results from your coalition of the willing then help build support for other people.
That's great. Yeah, and let me just add a couple things too. I think that was great. One of the things, I think this is a very common question that we get throughout all of our professional learning around school-wide SEL. One of my colleagues likes to ask a probing question that I like to highlight, which is, if you're asking where can we get the buy-in, why don't we have the buy-in, are you asking that question too late? And have you asked who was at the table when we began this conversation about SEL? I think this is exactly why kind of our learnings in our theory of action at CASEL have led us to really think about that foundational level of support as critical work to begin at the beginning. And so this involves, kind of providing foundational learning around SEL to all your stakeholders so that they even know what we're talking about. Sometimes there's lots of different definitions of what SEL is, and people may have resistance to some definitions and not others. And so getting really clear on how we're defining it as a school community is really important. And as part of that, we think creating a shared vision as one of the first steps that you do around SEL with all stakeholders at the table is really extremely important to part of them.
That's great. Peg asked the question, and I hope you'll notice this, is, are the activities in Onward sprinkled throughout the book, your new book? Is there an example page number you can point to? I'm assuming.
I think that was a question at the participants, Someone was just saying there's an Onward workbook.
Read some of the other suggestions that other people are using in their schools. Stephen writes, we have a program where a teacher can request a break if they are becoming dysregulated. They simply send an email to our SOS email group and someone swoops in to cover their room until the teacher can become regulated. Paul writes, we are starting purchasing Second Step at elementary and middle school level and looking at purchasing School Contact Connect for high school. Once we have resources, we are having counselors get to know it first year, second year rollout to all staff.
Now, I would just like to reiterate something that Paul highlighted that's really important. I'm glad to hear that he's beginning with counselors but has a plan to roll it out to all staff. Sometimes we've seen schools, because they believe the SEL expertise lies with guidance counselors or social workers, they sort of rally those folks to teach the lessons, and the classroom teachers just kind of sit in the back of the room while these experts come in and teach the SEL lessons. We would really encourage schools to be thinking about this as part of everyone's work with kids and not messaging that this is something that just the guidance counselor does. In fact, when schools are really thinking systemically about their school-wide SEL, they're providing training not just to classroom teachers, but there's also a role for the security officers, for the bus drivers, for the cafeteria workers, for those monitoring recess, for the front office staff, that we really like to think of this as a school-wide approach to helping students and adults promote SEL. And so one important way to do that is to make sure that it doesn't reside just with a few experts within the building.
That's a good suggestion. What would be your, from each of you, what would be your number one strategy for new principals who are just starting out in SEL? What should they do? What should be their first game plan? You mentioned a council or an advisory, whatever. Is that the first step? What's the first step they should take?
Well, I think we've mentioned the importance of bringing everyone to the table for an experience that allows us to set a shared vision. And I think when you bring folks to the table, generally we're seeing that we all sort of have aligned ideas of what we want the school to be like, what we want it to feel like for kids, for adults, what kind of a place do we want to work. And I think a really important step is to engage with those stakeholders, whether they're in the building or also including representation from parents and community partners, like out of school time providers, to really together build a vision of what kind of school we want to be. And then thinking about together how we can achieve that and what role social and emotional learning may play in helping us achieve that. There's a lot of guidance within the CASEL School Guide on the process for creating a shared vision. And I do think it's a really important step. I know, as Sherry mentioned, a lot of times people like to just go directly into a program, which does have its benefits. But what we've learned time and time again is that there's some really important foundational work to build commitment to the work and a sense of ownership by everyone in the community that we're all in this together. that we've seen is more effective when you've laid a strong foundation rather than jumping right to programs for kids.
Excellent. Any other suggestions from Justina or Sherry for strategies?
In my experience, one of the most important things a principal can do, in addition to what Melissa said, is creating a really strong SEL team. Principals are, you know, pulled in so many different directions in their work. I think it's really important to identify people who represent a broad cross-section of your school staff that includes teachers, and it might include counselors, it might include front desk staff, it might include, folks who are custodians and other folks who can all kind of share in the responsibility around SEL.
Good point. Sherry? Okay.
I would say as you build that team and as you work on building that vision, also take a minute to celebrate the things that you're already doing to build positive climate and culture in a school. Because schools aren't starting this work with nothing, and it's really important, I think, to celebrate all of the things that you're doing all along to build a strong positive climate, and then build your vision and mission and action plans from that base of strength that you already have.
It's wonderful. Tracy actually adds a comment in there on that. She says in their school, they have intentional times of celebrating each other, birthdays, sharing good news, et cetera. Also, we started the tap in, tap out practices too. So lots of good ideas that people have put in the chat box. We only have a few minutes left. I would like to thank everybody for participating today. If you have any last-minute questions or issues you want some guidance on, sounds like CASEL has a lot of good free resources for you to download on this topic. Tracy writes, she loves hearing Sherry's perspective and expertise. 6 or 7 years ago, she reached out to Sherry as our school started to implement a school-wide SEL program. And Sherry, you were so helpful in talking with me and supporting our demographics. So again, here on this last slide here, we have all three speakers' email addresses. We encourage you all to please contact them separately and ask more questions. In the meantime, today's presentation, this webinar, has been recorded. You can download both the video and the podcast from the NAESP website. Please just type in your membership number on our website, and you can open up our archive and download all of these resources. Encourage you all to please visit the CASEL website for additional resources. Any other comments from our panel about today?
I just want to say thank you so much for having us here. And I know we packed a lot of information into a short amount of time. You can feel free to reach out to any of us on these email addresses if you had any additional questions that surface after we hang up today, or if you're having any trouble finding any of the resources we mentioned, feel free to email us. Also, you can see on our homepage if you want to join the webinar coming up. And I would encourage you to subscribe to CASEL's newsletter, which will let you know of new resources, highlighted features, new research that comes out, new legislation that comes out is all available, and you'll be finding out real time about those news. So hopefully we'll be able to stay in touch with you all as you do this work.
Excellent. Thank you. As always, if any ESP can ever assist you in your professional development journey, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. We hope you all have an awesome afternoon, and we hope to see you in Louisville, Kentucky this summer at our summer conference on July 12th through 14th.